Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, it's The Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What a busy, busy day it was when we got off the radio, off the airwaves yesterday. Thought we'd have a sleepy, chill Tuesday. Incorrect. Lots to break down this morning. Lots to go through. Alec Manoa, LIV, PGA, trades in the NHL. It's a big day ahead. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, I was convinced yesterday that you were duped. Because the first I saw of the LIV PGA Tour merger, if you want to call it that, was a direct message from you. And I thought, like, wow, how could anyone fall for something so stupid? Because there's no way.
Buddy, this tweet came across my... It was the first thing was CNBC tweeted out, the PGA Tour agrees to merge with Saudi-backed rival LIV Golf. I must have looked at that tweet legitimately for 5 minutes. I looked at the handle. I clicked the photo. I looked at the Twitter page. I looked at 783,000 followers, thought, could someone have bought that? I looked at their replies. I looked at everything. How many other people I knew that followed this account?
You looked at Jay Monahan's mug in the CNBC set.
I thought maybe AI is so advanced now that they put a fake Jay Monahan. They made a robot version. I went through it before I sent it to you and quote tweeted it because I could not believe what my eyes were seeing. And then it became, you know, the PGA obviously officially announced it and then every other network picked it up. But I was not going to get duped by the biggest news drop that I probably have felt in, I couldn't remember being that blindsided by a world-changing sports moment, right? Like, I don't remember a moment, I mean, there's been trades that surprise you, but this is more than that. This is the state of a sport at 9:57 a.m., just dropping a bomb. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad it didn't, I crave the breaking news on the show. That never happens. I think we've got it maybe once in our entire time doing the show together. Actual good breaking news during the show. But this one would have been paralyzing because I wouldn't have believed it.
I would have been like, Justin, I just saw something on Twitter. And I would have read it to you and you would have said, no chance.
Right. I'm like, no one else is saying it.
And then if somebody hears it when we're saying it, it's wrong. I look like a moron. So I'm glad we were off the air because I had some time.
Yeah. It's not like a Friedman, you know, notification on your Twitter. It was one of the most random sourced, biggest stories, biggest news dumps in the history. Like, there are some that I'm not remembering, but I'm thinking about craziest sports stories ever. Manti Te'o, LIV PGA merger. Like, what else can compare to those two?
It's got to be in the Mount Rushmore of crazy things to happen in my sporting lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't know, send it in 590. What are we missing? Oh, Kobe's death. That was huge.
Yeah. Put that in a different category. It's tragic.
Well, of course,
tragic. You know, like...
But still, like, unexpected...
Greed.
Unexpected.
The greed of certain individuals.
Well, obviously, I'm not classifying it with that. But I mean, unexpected sports news that stops you in your tracks. Yeah. That's what I mean. What the hell... Where were you moment? And that was yesterday at 9:30 in the morning. So we've had some time to try to break through and break down some of this. We'll have Joe House on at 7 a.m. to help us with that. Host of Fairway Ruling Podcast, of course. You know him. There's still so many unknowns about what is going to happen with this merger. If it is a merger, really, what the future of golf looks like after the season. And it's the Canadian Open this week. So timing is tough for those that are hosting this event and all the organizers and Brian Crawdaddy, who we had on the show yesterday, I felt for him. We had a great interview. He went off into his day and then boom, 9 a.m. news drop.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes any attention is good attention. This is twice now that the RBC Canadian Open has been kind of consumed by what has happened here between or what is happening between LIV and the PGA. And I don't know, like last year was like a pretty... I don't know if it was made better, but it was kind of like a victorious moment, right? Rory McIlroy is the one standing up, and he wins at the RBC, and he's delivering these quotes and going at Greg Norman, and Jay Monahan's making promises he turns out he never kept. And like, it felt like a little bit of a momentum thing. Like, the spotlight was on the Canadian Open. Maybe that was a good thing. This one, while attention, again, usually not that bad, I'm not really sure the RBC Canadian Open is in the best place possible with this happening this week.
Yeah, and I think, oh, we'll be there Saturday. I think it'll be a different tone around how the players react, how the media reacts, who's there to cover it and who's there to enjoy it, and it'll be different. Mm-hmm. A spectacle, nonetheless. We'll get into more PGA Live, but this happens at 9:45 in the morning. And then later in the day, the news that we thought we might hear either today or tomorrow was Alek Manoah being sent down to Dunedin to a league or landing point is maybe more accurate for him for the next little while, the Florida Complex League. Mostly what is going to happen with that move is just a rebuild of who Alek Manoah is. It's not like he's out there pitching every day. It's not like he's going to Buffalo, which I didn't even think of the step below Buffalo. We talked about this yesterday, obviously, and what next steps were for Alek Manoah. I don't think I let my mind go past Buffalo. So, oh, send him to Buffalo, get him out there, maybe have him sit a little bit and, you know, take some time off. But this is the best case scenario for Alek Manoah right now. He's far, far away from the border where we could just have some media head down there and see what Alek Manoah is up to. He's in Florida at this million-dollar complex where there's a pitching lab where they can say, let's start from scratch, Alek Manoah. Or first, why don't you take some time before we start from scratch? Why don't you have a full, total reset? Use this complex. Use the pitching lab. Your family lives in Florida. You have some opportunity to spend some time working on you. Play some golf. Go to the beach. Whatever it is for the next
vacation.
Whatever it is for the next little while where Alek Manoah can reset, this is the best place for it. Obviously, probably a really, really, really difficult conversation. I know that John Schneider spoke about how Alek Manoah was obviously really emotional about it. You don't blame the kid. He just wants to be a competitor. He wants to help this team out. But this could not be a better spot for him. Time is undetermined for what happens next with Alek Manoah. It really could be a month, and it could be the rest of the season. And I'm glad that there is no timeline put on it, because it could take that long and you don't want to rush it. So Alek Manoah head down to the Florida Complex League yesterday, and we might be not saying Alek Manoah's name for a little while, and I think that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it with the AAA, the Buffalo stint, what that would entail. We'd have guys going down and covering those games, and it wouldn't really be anything different because the hitters are still pretty professional there. They are professional, but they're pretty good down there. Mm-hmm. They could probably still give Alek Manoah a lot of trouble, and he would still be dealing with live action and the consequences of giving up runs in live action. So I do think this is the much better recourse. Admittedly, had no idea what the Florida Complex League was before yesterday. We have Ryan Dempster on at 8:30. We'll ask a little bit more about what the Florida Complex League will entail. But this is closer to the option of not picking up the ball for a little while. And yeah, I'm sure being at the Florida Complex League, it's not an every fifth day thing for him to just pick up the ball and start throwing it. So whether he's just going to reset, maybe work out for a couple weeks, and then build back up the way he would maybe in an off season, maybe that's the option they go with. Whatever they're going to do, you just have to trust that they're going to try to do the right things, or they're going to do the right things. Again, there's no like blanket, there's no, you know, manual for this per se. But there are ideas of what you could do to try and get a pitcher back to where they need to be. And I'm sure they're going to exhaust their resources down at the facility where you should do these sort of things. So he's off a major league mound, which is step one, the most important thing. He's out of the spotlight, which is probably the second most important thing. And he can just work on himself for a while, whether that actually involves throwing pitches for the next little while. So best option. He's no longer going to be hurting the Blue Jays team on the mound, and he's probably in the best position to get himself right.
We have a couple clips from John Schneider on Manoah yesterday pregame. Afterwards, it was great to talk about something good, which was Kevin Gausman, but let's play John Schneider on why Manoah is going to the Florida Complex League and not Buffalo.
Florida Complex League, you know, our short season league that plays out of the player development complex, and I think the thinking of that is utilizing all of our resources that we do have there between pitching lab, gym, facilities on the field, all that kind of stuff to kind of really kickstart. Hopefully it's not a very drawn out process for him. And whenever he's ready, he'll be right back helping us.
And that's it. The biggest thing now is, okay, Manoah's there, out of the conversation for a while, but this has to work, right? This has to be a process where the Blue Jays are patient, ownership is patient, and Alec Manoah is patient, because it might not be a quick fix. It probably isn't a quick fix. Like, I don't know how you rebuild a pitcher. If you give him a ball and you say, go carry this around and fall in love with it again, like, there's probably a lengthy step ahead for Alec Manoah, and it probably would be frustrating. It'll probably be emotional. So take the time needed, and the Blue Jays need to keep performing in the meantime, because if it feels like they need to rush to get someone back in that starting rotation, that's the least positive outcome. So give it the time it needs. You don't make a major decision like this and do it in haste, right? You need to think about this could be the rest of the season. So what follows? What's your contingency plan now if Alec Manoah is out of your rotation until August? Let's just say August, right? What are you going to do now? Well, Saturday starters are still kind of TBD, but it looks like Bowden Francis and Trevor Richards might be like the likely candidates to start filling in with a couple bullpen days or starters, or openers at least. And then the Jays are likely to look outside the organization as well, which they're going to have to. So I'm sure there'll be more things to come. There'll be more information about who they're looking at, how they make this work, but you can't just be holding out hope for Alec Manoah in a month. You need to be planning that this could be all year.
Yeah, I mean, Alec Manoah isn't concussed, but I think you have to kind of treat this like a concussion, because if you rush back from a concussion, you risk doing further damage, right? So you have to get yourself right first before you can step up to that contact or that physicality that you were once used to and whatever you're doing to maybe get that concussion. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of just liken it to that. Like, you have to be sure when he's coming back up, and it's not sure that he's Cy Young caliber, but sure that he can help this team in any meaningful way, that he can be better than Bowden Francis, that he can be better than Trevor Richards, that he can just be justifiable in taking the ball every fifth day, or just being a part of this team in a lesser role. Whatever that is, they have to be sure before they bring him up again, because again, I think you do risk not permanent, not irreparable, but further damage if you bring him back up and it goes south once again. I mean, what do they have another league that you can go to after? Like, I don't really know. So yeah, I mean, it's imperative that he makes strides, that he gets right, that he rehabilitates himself down at the Florida Complex League, because that's the only way back.
I saw some slow pitch at Stanley Park last night. Looks like a worthy, building point. I watched some people out on the mound yesterday. Stanley Park.
That's the next spot.
Even lower.
Do they have like a pitching lab there?
At the park? There's the dog park. Mm. I was at the dog park watching a nice slow pitch softball game.
That's where
last
you
night.
Groom valedictorians.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good spot.
I can't even
Stanley
say
park.
Valedictorian.
Stanley Park baseball leagues at night. I got a little taste of that before watching the Blue Jays game. All right, so that's the Alec Manoah update. Might be nice to just not talk about Alec Manoah for a while.
Yes, looking forward to that.
Okay.
Let's talk about Kevin Gausman.
I would love to talk about... Kevin Gausman's my favorite Blue Jay.
Okay.
He is my favorite Blue Jay.
Stake in the
ground.
It's
taken me a little while to... I mean, I've been a Vladdy fan my whole life, number 27. Oh, Vladdy.
Off the bandwagon.
But man, I just... How can you not watch Kevin Gausman on the mound
Guy
every fifth day?
Guy slips to fourth on the team in home runs and you're off the bandwagon?
That's right. I'm getting the Kevin Gausman baby blue jersey. He loves the baby blues.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he wears every time he gets out there, because the pitchers choose. So Kevin Gausman, just the biggest point of confidence in this roster. We say it every fifth start. 13 Ks yesterday, ties a career high again. He just mows down the Astros. And I'll say that, second pitch of the game, home run. This is why I love Kevin Gausman. Not even faced. Just get back on the horse. No problem. Not even a little blip in mental fortitude. The guy is a baller. Goes out, composed, pitches the rest of this game. Blue Jays win 5-1. The one home run in the first inning, second pitch of the game. I don't know many other pitchers that I feel like could do that with such a high level of confidence and consistency. He's so consistent when he's out there. And he just, I think the team loves playing behind him. I think the fan base loves going to a Kevin Gausman game. Yeah, I love the guy.
Why wouldn't you? Quick, efficient, dominant, misses bats, 13 strikeouts yesterday.
It's really great baseball to watch.
It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is really all you can ask for. And I guess the only negative of losing Manoah here is that like urgency that Kevin Gausman seems to have, where it's like, well, that last night was bad. I've got to be dominant. Well, maybe you lose out on that. I don't think, I'm just, you know, that's in jest a little bit. But this guy, like, stepping up when they need him. We're talking about, oh, Alek Manoah needed to eat up some innings based on what happened in New York over the weekend where he used all those pitchers. Yeah. Well, Gausman's in that position all season long because he's been following Manoah, who can't get through 3-4 innings with any sort of regularity, or at least hadn't to this point. And Gausman's always had that little bit of extra pressure on him, and he always delivers. I mean, Kevin Gausman has been a godsend. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in the American League. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's one of the few guys who can go out there, throw 100-plus, strike out double-digit guys. Like, he is in a very, very select tier of elite, elite guys. And without him, the Blue Jays would be in a real, real difficult spot. Oh. And, like, it's kind of like, okay, it's hit or miss. You pay Barrios, and it's like, I'm not really sure. You pay Kikuchi, and, well, that's a bit of a miss, at least in terms of money spent. But they went out and paid Kevin Gausman, made the decision over other options to pay Kevin Gausman. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best decisions this regime has ever made, signing him in free agency, because he's been full value every single time out there. He's awesome. There's not much more to say.
I was thinking about this on the drive-in, and I didn't have an answer, really. Is this the best free agency signing in Toronto sports in blank?
Ooh.
Free agents.
It's not a long list.
Free agents in any sport, not trades. Free agent sports. There's probably some good soccer ones. Some good TFC ones.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, but...
big names. But Kevin Gausman, what he's done since being a free agent in Toronto, the way he's made the city fall in love with him, he's been a consistent powerhouse. Mm-hmm. He's authentic. He's genuine. He seems like an awesome guy. He's great with the media. He loves cinnamon buns.
I love cinnamon
he
buns.
He just seems like the perfect fit for this team and this city. He's a leader already coming in on a new team. What is, like, free agent signings in Toronto sports? Yeah, he's got to be up there.
Recent history, he's got to be. You're right. I mean, the best work these GMs and these executive teams have done over the last little while has been trades, mm-hmm. has been draft picks. I mean, the Toronto Raptors historically have never signed anyone really good in free agency.
Right.
The Maple Leafs seem to struggle in that regard. I guess you could say John Tavares has been a little bit more important. Both Tavares mm-hmm. and Gausman haven't had really any success in the more meaningful games, but Kevin Gausman is more dominant in his craft right now than John Tavares is in his craft at the moment. So, I mean, maybe Tavares is that guy. Maybe you can go with Giovinco if you really, really want to. He did help bring a championship to TFC, but Raptors, no. Leafs, it's been a struggle. Blue Jays, it's a lot of hit, or it's a lot of miss along with this big hit. Yeah, I mean, I think you're onto something. Should open the text line. Best free agent additions in recent history.
590. What are we missing? What are we forgetting? A couple texts in about big sports moments. OJ.
Okay.
Gretzky trade to LA.
Mm-hmm.
Gord Stellick to the GM position in the Maple Leafs.
Okay.
That's our buddy.
Yeah.
Those are some texts in 590. Big sports moments like we saw yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I think I was born like 5 days before the Gretzky trade, so I don't really know.
I was not even an egg yet.
I was born in Edmonton, so I think no one, even my family, really cared because Gretzky just got traded. But yeah, I mean, OJ, that's shocking. That's tragic. Mm-hmm. That's kind of before our time as well. But those are good options.
Send that in 590-590. Best recent free agent signings as well. In Toronto, because it could be Kevin Gausman on the top of that list. Blue Jays are back in action today after a big win against the Astros. They're 34-28 now, so Blue Jays, you know, quietly working their way back into it. I will say Dalton Varsho heating up has been a really great, pleasant trajectory that we've seen him on. George Springer again with a home run. Obviously, Bo Bichette is just continuing to be Bo Bichette. His level of confidence and consistency is very Kevin Gausman-like. So the two of them leading the way for the Blue Jays. But here we go. We got a long list ahead of some big games for Blue Jays, again against the Astros tonight, and you've got Chris Bassitt on the mound, who's another bright light right now in the Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. We got Kevin Lowry, ever best Toronto signing.
He was traded here, wasn't he?
Yeah, we're doing free agency.
Free agency, yeah.
Not trades. And Altidore and Bradley for TFC. These are Texan.
Bradley's kind of...
Bradley's aging poorly at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there was some glory years with TFC.
No, I know. I just because of the big articles that came out about the dad.
I said it when we were doing, like, sports misery rankings. You use TFC to your benefit in your argument. And for this argument, I'm going to say the Kevin Gausman and the Blue Jays a little bit more important than Javinko, Bradley, Altidore, and TFC.
There you go. Okay, so let's get back into our live
yes,
PGA
I can't wait. Let's do it.
Chat. Okay, so I guess the biggest way to start this is, in the end, money wins, right? Like, it is about money.
It always wins.
Money wins. As much as we tried, we, the PGA, those that stood there and held their own for what they believed in, what they wanted to fight for, in the end, you know, money controls everything, and money wins, and that's what we saw yesterday with LIV and PGA.
Yeah, money paired with strategy is undeniably powerful, right? So, you know, we kind of know what the PIF, Public Investment Fund, PIF? Yes, yeah. PIF. We know what they want to do, right? They want to, okay, we have all this oil money. We have to improve our reputation globally, and we have to think about where we are going next with all this money, because oil is a finite resource, and we cannot just rely on that if we want to continue to be rich and richer than everybody else. So they have to figure out other inroads, and sports is what they have chosen here. They've got their hands in a lot of other things like WWE and F1 and all this stuff. They're signing all these legendary soccer players to ridiculous contracts. It is what it is. But they wanted golf. And they wanted golf, I think, for a very specific reason. There's a lot of money in golf, but also the people who run golf are not exactly, are not as powerful and do not have the deep pockets that they had. They knew, I liken it to a poker game where there's two people left and you just, like, you're not even playing anymore because one stack's so big and the other's so small. And eventually, no matter what the cards say, the big stack is going to win. Like, in order to be small, you have to get lucky and continue to get the best hand over and over and over again until you can make it so that you actually have some wiggle room, some breathing room, and you can actually play the game, because the big stack always just dominates the small stack. And the big stack here is Saudi Arabia. And the small stack here was the PGA Tour. And we didn't really understand how different these stacks were when this story first came out, when we first started talking about LIV and first started talking about the Saudi Arabia's interest in golf. In the end, the stack for the PGA Tour, a nonprofit, and they're still profiting, like that's part of this too, but they were not built the way a major, major sports league should be built.
They were vulnerable.
They're vulnerable. That's it. Exactly. They were vulnerable. And the PIF, why does it always sound strange when I say that? The Public Investment Fund for the Saudis understood that and knew they could probably win this war if they really wanted to. And that's exactly what happened. The PGA Tour, the nonprofit, which probably had things they didn't want people to know about because, yeah, they're all living in mansions and flying on public or on private jets. Eventually, they knew, the Saudis knew, that they could swallow up the PGA Tour unless they just decided to be lesser than. And if you decide to be lesser than, that means there's going to be more people leaving your tour to make more money elsewhere. So this was a long game for them. This was strategic. And you're right. Big pockets always wins. And that's exactly what happened here.
Okay, so a lot to kind of break down with this. There's the Jay Monahan hand in it. There's the pending DOJ investigation, how that might have played into it. There's the fact that the players had absolutely no idea. We're blindsided with this, finding out on Twitter with the rest of us with that article that they probably thought was a dupe as well. There's the question of how they're going to handle those that didn't take this hundreds of millions of dollars, decided to stand for what they believed in, and now... Mm-hmm. are going to be left with empty-ish pockets and have to kind of walk back into this world. There's a fact that 52 weeks ago, we were doing this inaugural conversation at the Canadian Open about LIV. It's just so weird that exactly a year later, we're doing the same thing. That's just the whole... There's the fact that this is a member-run organization, apparently, but doesn't seem like it. So where do you want to start when we try to... And then, of course, the big question is like, what... do we not know yet? There's still so much we don't know.
I think we got to start with Jay Monahan.
Okay, right? Jay Monahan might be the biggest sports villain of all time at this point. Yep. This guy is a coward. It's pretty, pretty embarrassing, really, what he, how he flipped the script 180 degrees. He took this hardline position early on, and he said that this was bad for the game. He's not going to discuss anything with them. We're going to stay loyal to us. The PGA is something special. It's prestigious. It's historic. The players will stay here, and if you don't stay here, you're not a part of this. Like, he made this battle really one versus the other. And he's
good versus evil.
Good versus evil. Yeah, it was this evil empire banning players from joining, and then he walks everything back and is the mastermind behind this happening without informing his players, mm-hmm. those that stood with him and for something that they believed in, and turned down hundreds of hundreds of millions of dollars, and they weren't consulted at all, and they found out on Twitter, this guy sucks.
He does. If he just, however, if he just stayed quiet, right? Like, let's say he was just kind of like, okay, we got, you know, we're continuing. We still think this is the best tour in the world, and we're going to fight for it, but we're going to see what happens, right? Like, if he was just kind of honest that way, but not mm-hmm. really, not so defensive and begging and pleading and evoking 9/11, actually mm-hmm. painting this picture like, hey, if you go over there, then you're a 9/11 sympathizer.
That's the tipping point. It's
that's
gross.
That's the sort of thing. That's mm-hmm. what he was doing. He was saying, if you go over there, you got blood on your hands, right?
Yep.
So that's what, that's basically, he sets the ground rules, right? Those are the ground rules. If you do this, you're that. If you stay here, you're on the up and up. You're good. So evoking 9/11 is really where he went wrong, because if he was just like, really quiet about things, you know, he can make the decision to accept blood money. Cause guess what? Blood money runs the world, right? Right. Like mm-hmm. you can stand on the moral high ground. And I think people should think about morality, but if you think about your life, you think about maybe your employer or your spouse's employer or someone who employs your employer or whatever, the shoes you're wearing, the clothes you're wearing, the car you drive, everything is connected to something that you really wouldn't want to look under the hood of. But that's the world, and money runs the world, and people that do bad things have a lot of money in this world. So you can kind of understand if they reach the pact where it's like, we can't win, we have to do something. Here it is. Here's golf. But you're right. This is the most cowardly move ever because of the picture that he painted and the ground rules that he set forth. And for that reason, I think this is the most shameful timeline or moment in the history of Commissioner of Sports in North America. Because you told us that you're an evil person if you deal with these people, and then behind everyone's back, you betrayed the people who stayed good, who stayed loyal, who supported you, and took that blood money anyway. And not only that, not only did the, like, a quick get-rich scheme for him, whatever, he turns his back on everyone, he goes and lives on a beach somewhere, and he's never to be heard again, he gave up the ship. He gave up the sport.
Mm-hmm.
He sold a sport that people love, that people play.
And have been loving for a very long time.
Yes, that people have, their whole life is in this game. He sold that game to the people he said or suggested were connected with 9/11 and other heinous acts all over the world. He sold a sport to people he said were bad. It's really like, it's not just about, you know, saving face for the PGA Tour or saving his bacon, making sure that he's still a rich man and not someone who's without a job. He sold out an entire sport. It's crazy. It's crazy that he had this much power to do what he did and that he did it without anyone knowing.
And that's the craziest thing for me is obviously we're all blindsided by this. He's doing this over a couple weeks, very hush-hush, maybe four people in a room deciding the future of a sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's very succession.
Who knew is an interesting question.
It is. Very succession.
It is.
And it happens, and he flies to Canada, flies to Toronto yesterday for a closed-door meeting with the players that are here, which we've heard it was heated and intense, understandably. I would have loved to just bust down that door and see the situation with Jay Monahan, who's trying to save face with absolutely nothing to stand on. Mm-hmm. We have a couple clips to play. Here is last year's Jay Monahan comments. 52 weeks ago, 1 year ago, this is what Jay Monahan had to say.
Well, I talked to players. I've talked at a player meeting, and I've talked to a number of players individually for a long period of time. And I think you'd have to be living under a rock to not know that there are significant implications. And as it relates to the families of 9/11, I have two families that are close to me that lost loved ones. And so my heart goes out to them. And I would ask, you know, any player that has left or any player that would ever consider leaving, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
1 year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now look where we are. And he's been called a hypocrite.
He's standing side by side with the leader of the PIF.
And so here is Monahan yesterday on being called a hypocrite, which is a perfect title for him. This is what he had to say.
I recognize everything that, you know, that I've said in the past and in my prior positions. I recognize that people are going to call me a hypocrite. And any time I've said anything, I said it with the information I had at that moment. And I said it based on someone that's trying to compete for the PGA Tour and our players. And so I accept those criticisms. But circumstances do change, and I think that, you know, in looking at the big picture and looking at it this way, that's what got us to this point.
Situations do change. Yeah, I got offered probably hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm going to go live in Mystique in an island. You'll never hear from me again. Bye.
Yeah, that and, oh, like, I do wonder, okay, you know, they were a good target because, you know, it's a nonprofit, whatever, and we have so much more money than you, but also were there so many things that the PGA Tour had to try to cover up.
And so
that
they were, the DOJ,
they were backed into a corner. And again, this is speculation, but like, it makes sense because there's so many rich people in golf and you're trying to, I don't know if it's skirting taxes by being a nonprofit. I don't really understand really what it means to be a nonprofit, but it sounds funny just on the surface, but the PGA Tour makes no money. They don't make profit.
Like, we're going to go spend money this weekend.
Right? So I think the PGA Tour realized, hey, we're going to get exposed here. We're going to lose this anyway I'm going to lose this, I being Jay Monahan, mm-hmm. because I've been doing this when the rules suggest I can only do that. And he had no other choice but to give up control or cede control. And it's either cede control and make a ton of money or walk away or get forced out and maybe go to jail or maybe lose all your fortune or whatever. So he took the cowardly way out. He gave up the ship in the end, and now he gets to be the guy who makes a ton of money and lives on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And for as long as they'll have him, he's going to be the CEO of this thing.
And I think that players will obviously have opportunities to voice their displeasure with this. We're at the Canadian Open starting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I know the players are already here, of course, with the player meeting, but I don't think they're going to be able to keep their emotion under wrap, and they deserve to be able to say what they want. I wonder how being mid-competition is going to affect that. Nonetheless, we heard a little bit. We have some Adam Hadwin, obviously Canadian, some comments from him. A lot of reporters were there tweeting out some vibes. Vibes checks were low.
Well, yeah, it is interesting. And Hadwin, I want to hear from Hadwin, mm-hmm. of course. But the players who were most affected aren't in Toronto right now, right?
Yeah, and it's tough timing because Open is a week away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love the Canadian Open, but there's certainly an opportunity to win the U.S. Open in a week, and some players aren't here. Rory is here. Rory is the face of this whole PGA movement.
Rory for sure.
And he had to shoulder a lot of the comments last year. It was mm-hmm. the PGA standing for what they believed in, and Rory being the face of this 1 year ago at the Canadian Open, he's going to have to do that all over again, starting probably today when he gets on the podium.
But I will say the large majority of players who turned down $100 million because of loyalty are not here. Rory's really the only one,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because this is a field in Canada right now of players who are probably going to benefit from this, who never had that money thrown in their face and now are going to live in a Saudi-backed golf world where the money is going to be more bountiful than it ever was. So it is interesting to hear that these opinions, and we'll go to Hadwin, but understanding that, hey, all these players are affected by this differently.
Yeah, I think the one thing that ties them together is they understand what the PGA Tour means and what it has meant and the history behind it.
And they understand betrayal.
And the legacy of it and just having something ripped from your grasp with zero heads up. And as a member-run league or organization, not having a say in this as of this point. Okay, so Adam Hadwin, we have two things from him. Let's play Hadwin on why he saw this coming.
I think anybody who thought about it logically would see that something was going to have to happen. Fracture is a strong word, but you can't take away the best players in the game and have them at separate events and only be together four weeks a year. It's not putting the best golf product forward.
And so just in a vacuum, go back and just try to ignore all the other things that's going on. This is actually good for the sport in a sense, maybe for the fans. It's really hard to say that without knowing all the other garbage going on, but you're going to see all the players at tournaments moving forward. And that is probably good for the sport, but you know,
100%. The great irony if you just turn a blind eye, which many sports institutions mm-hmm. are doing, if you choose to turn the blind eye, the game of golf is going to be so much better because all the players will have the freedoms to play in the big events. They'll have the freedoms to play each other. They will play for way more money.
They're not playing on a YouTube stream in some country that you've never heard of.
You're going to have the elevate events are going to be truly elevated because all the best players are there and more money than they could have ever expect will be up for grabs in these instances. Mm-hmm. So the golf world, the golf fan is going to be treated by this. It's going to be way better than it was. But again, you just have to overlook the morality issue, which again is something that we all do in our daily lives. Like the shoes you're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Who produced those? It's a fact of life. And the people that were able to digest that or accept that or just compartmentalize that, rationalize that, they're the ones who won here. They're the ones who come out best in this. The Brooks Koepkas,
the
Dustin
Johnsons.
And they
all get to Twitter yesterday and they made it known that they're winning. You know, mm-hmm. there was a very interesting experiment in Twitter yesterday watching some of the LIV guys have their moment with, and they all happened to have little margaritas in their hand poolside when they posted these photos saying like, oh, it's great day to play golf, a great day to be a golfer. And then there's the other side. Love finding out morning news on Twitter. Colin Morikawa. You have Phil Mickelson saying, awesome day today with a happy face. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Brooks Koepka tweeting. You've got Joel Damon tweeting. Like, you know, everyone had their way of making it known that they found out about this information. And you could tell the difference between LIV guys. And you could tell the difference between PGA guys. And the winner might be a Brooks Koepka. Might be a Phil Mickelson
who
knew this was going to come because he said at the last tournament, oh, you know, like he had this little air about him that he knew something, right?
Yeah. Those who knew, we'll get to that in a second. But Phil Mickelson is the biggest winner here because he was talking about the PGA mismanaging the business mm-hmm. years ago, years before Saudi's interest, years before LIV ever became a thing. He was banging the drum on this, and he, whether he found or they found him or however this all together came together, the people who were going to expose the wrongdoings or the inefficiencies of the PGA Tour, Phil found them and Phil used them to underscore his point and get what he thought the golf world needed this entire time.
And got $200 million.
He found the money in order to do it. Yes. Mm-hmm. And now he's right. He got all the money. He got the $200 million. And he has helped, I guess, golf get to a point where it can be its most profitable. This is what he was talking about all along. It's just the way you went about it and the morality thing, because it maybe always needed to become more big league than it was because they were suppressing salary. They were suppressing the business, whatever, so on and so forth. And Phil always saw that. And that's why Phil's the biggest winner. But there are three camps of players. And you mentioned it with the Twitter reactions. That tells you what it means, right? Like, mm-hmm. A part of this is like, okay, so what, are they all going to LIV? Are we playing 54 holes? Are we wearing shorts? Are we not doing cuts?
Shorts, like, a big comment.
This is like, you don't know what golf is going to be, but you can tell by the reactions who wins, who loses, who's most aggrieved, and who's the most happy. There's the players who won, who took the money, and now get everything, right? And they were right, justified in their decision. There were those who were duped and betrayed and lost out on the money that they were offered, the McElroys, Zalatoris, Matt Fitzpatrick, the people that stayed loyal and lost out in the end. And then there are people like Corey Connors, who probably are going to benefit, Adam Hadwin, who were never, I don't think, offered this money. But they are now going to be playing golf in their primes in a system that has so much more money involved in it. So really, there's the minority are the people who are aggrieved. The minority might be, it might be the overwhelming majority right now in terms of people are mad and people feel betrayed and people feel like they were lied to. But in the end, there's a very small group of golfers who really, really lost here. And it's the ones who were offered live money and turned down live money only to be stabbed in the back.
And that's why it's going to be interesting to break this all down throughout the next, I'm sure, a week. It's going to be, there's a lot that we don't know yet, like the structure, when this happens, what the name of this new whatever league is going to be called, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot we don't know. And, you know, Joe House will help us get through some of that, you know, the real winners, the real losers, if the DOJ investigation had anything to do with it. But you had an interesting comment about, you think maybe some people did know or might have known about this going on before the news drop as yesterday hit the world all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like connecting dots more than anything. And I don't think Rory McIlroy knew what Jay Monahan was going to do. But Rory McIlroy has been a different guy over the last 6 weeks, right? Rory McIlroy has been seen hugging Brooks Koepka after winning the PGA Championship. He's been not talking ill toward Liv for the last little while. He fell apart. Was it at the Masters? He fell apart in one big spot and then didn't show up to the next tournament, took that loss in money, maybe because, hey, he was told, and again, I'm speculating, we can't win this, Rory, so you should stop. You should stop waving the flag for us. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe someone said, I don't know what's going to happen, but I have a feeling, or I know, that we ultimately can't win this battle. The war will be lost. So stop putting yourself out there. Because he has stopped putting himself out there, and it is pretty convenient timing. And then you got Phil Mickelson, who around the same time that Rory went quiet, started talking again, right? He was mute at the Masters dinner.
And all of a sudden, he's the Mr. Publicity Man.
He's all over Twitter. He's showing up at events. He's playing well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like his life turned around in the same way that Rory's life changed or Rory's demeanor changed, which to me would tell you that, hey, there was an idea that something was coming. There was an idea that evil would win and good would lose, maybe. Maybe there were just breadcrumbs that you could follow and it was enough to change your tune. But tunes were changed with the two biggest and the faces of each side in Rory McIlroy and Phil Mickelson.
Whether they knew explicitly, as you said, probably not. But just maybe like a temperature check. Things are bad. We're going to lose this. Maybe the fact that, and this for me, I don't know if it's tinfoil hat or not, but the fact that all of the pending litigations were dropped with this merger and that the antitrust investigations are now over and, you know, we're going to sweep all that under the rug makes me think that maybe the PGA realized they're caught and they were going to lose regardless. And so let's take the bag. Let's move this together. And so that is something that maybe Rory finds out about, that like we're losing the legal battle of this. Mm-hmm. We might not come out unscathed. The best thing forward is for us to go back 180, flip the script. Jay Monahan becomes, you know, Satan and we just move forward. Yeah. And maybe he knew that, and maybe that's why he's been a little bit less public-facing, but he's going to have no chance to hide today, tomorrow, and moving forward. I'm sure he'll face the podium today before the tournament tees off, and I'll be really interested to see his demeanor. You know, I feel for the guy because he has sacrificed a lot. I mean, he's still got heavy pockets, and, you know, you're a professional golfer, and your life is pretty good. But still, like, you stood for something that you believed in, and you got slapped in the face by a guy that you had to put your trust in. And that's hard for anyone in any level of their industry, your boss at work, your partner. Like, it's never nice to be blindsided, and you're just blindsided in the biggest stage of all time and the biggest sporting move that we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, it should be a remarkable contrast, because last year the RBC Canadian Open was a moment for Rory McIlroy to be victorious, to be the face of golf, to be the person that everyone was going to rally behind. He wins the tournament. He calls out Greg Norman after.
Yep.
He makes it pretty clear that, hey, the PGA Tour is still pretty good and we're going to fight here and we're going to win. That's what it felt like last year. And then a year later, he's got to show up again as really the only guy who was majorly, majorly affected by this. And he's got to answer questions about losing the war that it looked like he was trying to spearhead the other way.
You know, we do winners and losers every Monday. The biggest winner in all this, Netflix. They had the cameras rolling for their full swing.
Well, they better. They better.
Nope, they tweeted out, "You better believe we were filming when this broke."
Yeah, but were they filming in the room? There is no, because we were disappointed by Full Swing, right?
Yep.
Season 1.
This is going to change everything.
And it was the year that was supposed to, is that the tagline? It changes, I think it was the tagline.
Oh.
But yeah, like.
It was.
But it was supposed to be amazing, right?
They were filming when this happened yesterday. They have come out and said it.
They were filming inside
with
Jim Monahan.
They were filming the whole thing.
Then there's no excuse for it to not be good.
It better
because
be the best thing I've ever watched in my life.
They had a narrative handed to them on a silver platter, and it sucked. And if they blow this, then there's no hope for the
TV show. All it sounds like is that they have the proper footage. Now you got to make a storyboard and put it in a nice 45-minute episode for me. 7 parts of it, I don't care, but I need to see this when it was happening. And they came out on Twitter and said the producer tweeted it, Netflix tweeted it, they were there. So you better deliver.
Okay? They better deliver.
But that would be a very important part of this, is trying to see as transparent as we can. But, you know, there'll be things we don't know. Anyway, RBC Canadian Open, tees off tomorrow. And so we'll be getting lots and lots of pulse checks from the folks that are there and, you know, the big media. I think a lot of people flew up yesterday to spend the weekend here in Toronto. So maybe a win / loss for... A
couple extra credentials being handed out.
They were printing those fast yesterday. Yeah. They were tossing lanyards together because it's going to be a big weekend. Joe House is going to join us at 7, host of the Fairway Rolling Podcast, host of the Ringer Gambling Show. See how he can help us break this all down. There was also a big NHL trade yesterday. We'll get to that maybe during the something to chew on section. I don't want to force it. But, yeah, 3-team trade. Trades are happening. Danny Briere, he's making his statement as a GM. First time in the seat. Getting excited for their big rebuild. We'll get to all that. We got the A-list on the other side of the break. Send in your text at 590-590. How this compares to other big breaking news sports moments in your life. We'll get to those throughout the show.
Sportsnet 590. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, there's times where we need to evaluate our sleep schedules as morning show hosts, getting up, you know, in the 4 o'clock hour. It could take a toll on you. And even the greats, the French Open, struggle with maybe overdoing it a bit with the sleep aids. CeCe Pass, who you bet on yesterday and blew it against Carlos Alcaraz, number one.
Oh, I have an excuse. What is it?
Yeah, this is going to help you a lot with your pride. He fell 6-2, 6-1, 7-6.
7-6 is what we needed. The whole,
it's tough.
Whole match.
Five. What is that called? Tiebreak sets. What is the proper wording for that? You know what I'm
saying. That's a win in a tiebreak. 7-6.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, very lopsided. Alcaraz only needed 2 hours and 11 minutes to beat CeCe Pass. Okay, so after the match, which began at 8:30 p.m. local time, CeCe Pass revealed an unusual reason for his slow start. He said he was sleepy due to a pre-match nap and melatonin. Quote, "One thing that I'm going to try to avoid in the future is having melatonin pills and naps before matches because it clearly doesn't seem to be working. Schedule has been a little different the past few days. I had some late night sessions," which he did. "Not super late, but late enough for me to kind of have my sleep schedule ruined in a way. You know, sleep is very vital, important thing. Recovery is most important when it comes to playing in big slams like this." So I guess he kind of overdid it with the melatonin, or he's looking for something for his poor performance. Nonetheless, I mean, I've used melatonin before when I've gone to the other side of the world to have to, you know, like a completely 12-hour time difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what he's talking about. Like sometimes it just feels like it lingers in your body. Like it's just like you're just lethargic. But you're also, you know, you've played at the French Open before. You're a pro. Like, you kind of travel all over the world.
You're European.
Yeah, you think that's exactly true. You are European. So you do have to travel all over the world and play in different tournaments. So how are you mismanaging your melatonin dose?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew about his melatonin dosage before I made that my pick yesterday. I'm so terrified of trying to do something to help my sleep, whether it be melatonin or something else, because I feel like I'm just going to sleep through an alarm.
It is not a nice feeling.
But like a little melatonin to reset the old body clock on a Friday night, that's pretty vital.
Yeah, but there's also like fast acting and slow release where it's, you know, it's like either get you to sleep right now or let's get you to a nice long 8 to 10 hour sleep. So maybe mess that up a bit. But there's your excuse, Justin. CC Pass, a little sleepy.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that to the table. Yeah, I feel better about it
I'm
now.
I'm always there to help you with the wake and rake.
Because you always mock me when I step out of my lane.
No, but you know what? That was Neil's pick too, man.
It was.
Neil and you didn't know about.
No. We got an excuse.
He didn't know. I just saw a tweet that Rory has arrived at Oakdale.
Mm-hmm.
He's teeing up for the Pro-Am at 7 a.m. and we'll meet with the media afterwards. So cameras are on.
Like right after our show?
Rory watch.
It's
like the Kawhi watch with the helicopter or the plane. We're on Rory watch at Oakdale. Okay, we got a full day ahead. Joe House, host of the Fairway Rolling podcast, will join us at 7. We're going to do Tenable Untenable at 7:30. We got lots to go through, some Tenable Untenable situations. Then we have Jean-Sébastien Jéguer joining us at 8 o'clock. Been working on my French in front of the mirror. It's a tough one.
I'm a little scared for you.
No, he's awesome. He won the Conn Smythe when his team lost the Stanley Cup final. Are we seeing that with Bobrovsky?
We are not.
But we might have at one point thought that we were. We'll talk to him all about that. And then Ryan Dempster, former MLB pitcher, will help us break down. Oh, we said we weren't going to talk about Minot anymore. After this, we won't talk about Minot anymore after 8:30. Then we'll do a wake and rake. We have to make our Canadian Open picks as well. So if you have any thoughts, feelings, who's our specialist? I think it's Jarrett in Halifax. Wakey, wakey, Jarrett, give us some picks. Help us out with the Canadian Open. We'll go to Joe House after the break.